Good evening. As always, it's a great blessing to be here, and I'm excited to have this time to study God's Word together. Tonight, we're going to continue the series on the book of 1 Corinthians, continuing into chapter 9. In this chapter, we'll go into a lot of new concepts, things that we haven't touched on much in the past chapters of this book. And one of those main ideas that's encompassed in chapter 9 is the idea of supplying church workers, those who went about and taught the gospel, such as Paul, supplying them with funds and what they needed for their work. And so that's going to be a central part of this chapter. Now, as we go throughout this, I want to remember one key thing, and that is Paul's motives in what he did, what he said in this chapter, and everything else. His goal was to teach the gospel and to just further God's work. And so some of these things, people misunderstand some of these passages to say that Paul was being arrogant in some of the things that he was saying, say that he was being greedy in some of the things that he was saying. And so some of those things will come up in our study this evening. And as we go throughout it, I want to keep in our minds Paul's motives in what he did. So now let's begin here in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, reading the first two verses. 1 Corinthians 9, verses 1 through 2. It says, "Am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus, Christ our Lord? Are you not my work in the Lord? If I am not an apostle to others, yet doubtless I am to you, for you are the seal of my apostleship in the Lord." So here Paul began by just laying out some of his credentials. He said, "I am an apostle and I've seen Jesus." Those are the two aspects that we're going to focus on in these first couple of verses. Now, he's laying out his credentials for a specific purpose, and that is to explain to various people who were doubting his intentions, his integrity in his teachings, to explain to them who he was and why he had the abilities that he had and why that he had certain rights that we'll discuss later on in this chapter. Now, as we look at these first couple of concepts, him being an apostle and him seeing Jesus, he makes a connection between those two things. And that connection becomes a great deal more distinct when we read a couple of passages such as Acts chapter 1 and verse 22. And this connects the idea of apostleship with seeing Christ. Acts 1 and 22, they were about to select a couple of new apostles to replace Judas here. It says, "Beginning from the baptism of John to that day, when he was taken up from us, one of these must become a witness with us of his resurrection." So here, they were about to select new apostles after Judas betrayed Christ and after Christ's death. And so they're talking about the requirements for an apostle here, and that apostle had to be a witness with them of the resurrection of Christ. And so Paul saying that he had seen Jesus was him basically saying that he was qualified to be an apostle, because this was one of those qualifications for them. We see specifically when he saw Jesus and a little bit more about the connection between these two things in 1 Corinthians 15, verses 8 and 9. 1 Corinthians 15, verses 8 and 9 says, "Then last of all, he was seen by me also as by one born out of due time. For I am the least of the apostles, who am not worthy to be called an apostle, because I persecuted the church of God." So here Paul talked about when he saw Christ and how that connected to his apostleship. And he says that he was as one born out of due time. So all of the other apostles had been apostles for some time. And even the last two appointed after Christ's death had been appointed long before he had. And so him becoming an apostle at this point, he's saying he was one born out of due time in his apostleship. And it seems like he's connecting the beginning of his apostleship with seeing Christ. And he saw Christ in his vision on the road to Damascus. And so that was his witness of the resurrection of Christ that made him, or one of the things that made him qualified to be an apostle. And so that is very important in him laying out his credentials at this point as an apostle of Jesus Christ. Now, in these first couple of verses of 1 Corinthians chapter 9, some people have a tendency to say that Paul was being arrogant, that he was boasting about something of himself. I personally know people who will say Paul had an eye problem, speaking of somewhat of an arrogance issue. And so people say that he had this issue of pride. However, he explained himself specifically in 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and 1 in a similar instance. 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 1 says, "Oh, that you would bear with me in a little folly. And indeed, you do bear with me." So here Paul is asking them to bear with him in a folly. So what folly is he referring to here? Now we know certain passages in specifically Proverbs where it talks about people who boast and people who are pride or are prideful as being fools. And so Paul is saying here that they need to bear with him in that certain folly. And then in verse 16 of this same chapter, he says, "I say again, let no one think me a fool. If otherwise, at least receive me as a fool, that I also may boast a little." And so here we see what this folly was. Paul explained that it was his boasting. And so here he admitted that he was boasting at this point. So how could Paul, as a worker of Christ that he was, as a worker in the gospel as he was, boast as he did here in one of his epistles? He explained the reason for this in 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 12. He said, "But what I do, I will also continue to do, that I may cut off the opportunity from those who desire an opportunity to be regarded just as we are in the things of which they boast." So here he's talking about his detractors, is what we'll call them. The people who are trying to undermine his reputation in order to come in and start teaching false doctrine. These were false teachers among the Corinthians trying to stop Paul. And they did that partially by saying these false things about him, trying to accuse him of different things, accusing him of being insincere in his work and things like that. And so Paul, in saying these different credentials about himself, explaining things about his work, was trying to stop them from claiming these things about him, cutting off their opportunity. So his boasting was not just to lift himself up. This was to further the gospel in his opportunity in Corinth, his opportunity with the false teachers, perhaps, but more importantly, stopping them from getting in the way of his work with the church there. And so that was his effort in explaining his credentials. Now, continuing on in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, let's read verses 3 through 6. 1 Corinthians 9, verses 3 through 6. It says, "My defense to those who examine me is this. Do we have no right to eat and drink? Do we have no right to take along a believing wife, as do also the other apostles, the brothers of the Lord, and Cephas? Or is it only Barnabas and I who have no right to refrain from working?" So here Paul talked about a few different things and a few different rights that he had as a gospel worker. Now he began by saying, "Do we have no right to eat and drink?" Now Paul wasn't just saying that he had a right to have food. He was saying that he had a right to have that food and drink provided to him from the church. Now Paul was not being greedy in this. In fact, he was a very content man, and he talked about that in different places, for example, in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 8, where he advised Timothy, "And having food and clothing, with these we shall be content." And so he explained to Timothy that the very things he had just said the church ought to provide, or that he had a right to have provided for him, that they should be content with those things, just the bare necessities. And so he's telling Timothy that they should be content in those things. And in addition, later on he said, in whatever state he was in, he would be content. Whether he needed something, whether he had more than he needed, he would always be content in that. So Paul wasn't being greedy in saying that he had this right. Instead, let's tie it back to the context of this chapter. He had these people trying to say that he was not sincere, and perhaps even accusing him of just being in the work, or partially being in the work, just because of the compensation that he would receive from it. And so in that, him explaining that he had a right to these things, and that he was not being demanding in it, was explaining to them that this should be the way that the church functioned. He was not explaining this right to make demands of the church. He also talked about having this ability to take along a wife with them, how an apostle or any type of gospel worker should be able to have a wife. Now, he's not just saying that that gospel worker should be able to marry again, let's tie it back to the context. He was saying that he should be able to have a wife, and that wife should be supported by the church as well as himself. And so that, again, is explaining a right of an apostle. He used an example here about a specific individual who was married, did the same type of gospel work as he did. And that was a man named Cephas. We see who Cephas was in John chapter 1, verses 40 through 42. John chapter 1, 40 through 42. It says, "One of the two who heard John speak and followed him was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. He first found his own brother, Simon, and said to him, 'We have found the Messiah,' which is translated, 'the Christ.' And he brought him to Jesus. Now when Jesus looked at him, he said, 'You are Simon, the son of Jonah. You shall be called Cephas,' which is translated, 'a stone.'" So we see here that this man named Cephas was actually Simon Peter, who we know so well as the apostle of Jesus Christ. But he was not just an apostle, but also an elder. And he received support from the church for both of those responsibilities. We see, however, in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 that he was married and that his wife was also supported with him, that support covered him and his family. And so Paul was explaining, for the purpose of cutting off the arguments of these detractors, that he should be able to have a wife and that wife would be supported. But as we know, Paul did not choose to have a wife or a family. He just wanted to make this point to say, gospel workers have this right, and I'm not being demanding, and other people are not being demanding, if they want to have a wife and have her supported as well as they are. And so he's again making these explanations of the rights of an apostle to cut off the arguments of these detractors. Another thing in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 that he talked about as a right of a gospel worker was that they should be able to forbear working. Now, obviously, he was not talking about forbearing the gospel work that they did, but rather forbearing secular labor. So he was saying that they shouldn't have to go out and get a secular job in order to provide for their work. However, we see that at this point in his work with Corinth, he did choose to take this step. In Acts 18 and verse 3, we see a little bit about Paul's secular labor. Acts 18 and verse 3. It says, "So because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them and worked, for by occupation they were tent makers." So here we see Paul staying with Aquila and Priscilla in Corinth and building tents with them as a secular profession that he made money for his own work to supplement what he gained from the churches. And at this point in his work, he stopped receiving funds from Corinth in order to stop those detractors from saying that he was just greedy. And so he stopped receiving support from them. He still did receive support from some other congregations, specifically Philippi, but in addition, he supplied a great deal of his work with his own secular labor. In Acts 20 and verse 34, we see a little bit more about what he did for his work. Acts 20 and 34 says, "Yes, you yourselves know that these hands have provided for my necessities and for those who were with me." So here Paul seems to be indicating that he provided a great deal of the funds that he used with his secular labor for his work in the church. And so he was taking this opportunity to have a secular position in order to stop the arguments of his detractors. But he was not saying that every apostle should have a secular position. Instead, he was explaining that the apostles and any type of gospel worker should have the ability to forego secular labor, and that they should have this opportunity not to work secularly, but for their gospel work to be provided for from the church. Now, as I mentioned, he did still receive some funds from other churches for his work in Corinth, and he indicated that in 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 8. It says, "I robbed other churches, taking wages from them to minister to you." So while Paul did provide for a lot of his work, he still received funds from other churches to supplement that and to help in his work. Now, continuing on in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, let's read verses 7 through 10, where it talks about some of the rewards for Christian labor. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 7 through 10. It says, "Whoever goes to war at his own expense? Who plants a vineyard and does not eat of its fruit? Or who tends a flock and does not drink of the milk of the flock? Do I say these things as a mere man? Or does not the law say the same also? For it is written in the law of Moses, 'You shall not muzzle an ox while it treads out the grain.' Is it oxen God is concerned about? Or does he say it altogether for our sakes? For our sakes, no doubt, this is written, that he who plows should plow in hope, and he who threshes in hope should be partaker of this hope." So here Paul began in this section of verses by making a couple of analogies that seem insane to us. First of all, he said, whoever goes to war at his own expense. Let's imagine for a moment that a man would volunteer as a soldier and that he would go perhaps overseas to serve his country and that his country would not make any effort to provide for him. How ungrateful would that be? He would be sacrificing himself for his country for absolutely nothing. And so, in a sense, this ties back, as Paul is connecting these two things here, it ties back to gospel workers who go out and they work for the church, they work for the Lord, and perhaps they would do it for nothing. But it seems right, and it's actually prescribed by God, that they should receive some type of compensation for their labor. That's the connection that he's making with these examples here. In addition, he said, "Who plants a vineyard and does not eat of its fruit?" Let's think about a farmhand. Goes out and helps this farmer plant his vineyard, doesn't get paid. It doesn't make sense. That's not how our society works, and that's not how God planned for gospel workers to function. He wanted them to be able to be provided for in the work that they were doing. And it's the same for this example of someone tending a flock and not drinking of the milk. Someone working for a cause and the people who are a part of that cause not helping them and compensating them at all for their labor. And so it doesn't make sense in any of those circumstances, so why should it make sense for a gospel worker to go out and give their lives to the gospel without having any help? Now again, let's remember what Paul was saying with this statement here. He's not demanding more money from the church. He's trying to cut off the argument of his detractors by saying that those who did receive more compensation were still just receiving something that the church wanted to help them with, something that, according to God and his prescriptions for a gospel worker, that they had a right to. And so that was the focus of his argument here, and it was all focused on furthering the gospel. Now let's continue to Deuteronomy chapter 25 and verse 4, which Paul actually quoted in the previous passage. It says, "You shall not muzzle an ox while it treads out the grain." So Paul quoted this saying that in the Old Testament, this law from the Old Law said that someone or an animal who treads out grain should be provided for, and it should be allowed to eat some of the grain. And so he connected that back to apostles, and he said that actually God had made this law with connection to the apostles. He said that it did connect to them, and that an apostle or any type of gospel worker should be able to go out and work but receive something from it. And so he's connecting the old law and God's prescriptions hundreds of years and thousands of years before that they should connect to apostles and how they should work and those who worked for the gospel. Let's continue to 1 Corinthians 9, verses 10 through 12, where Paul talked about someone working in hope. 1 Corinthians 9, verses 10 through 12. It says, "Or does he say it altogether for our sakes?" Speaking of that passage in Deuteronomy, "For our sakes, no doubt, this is written, that he who plows should plow in hope, and he who threshes in hope should be partaker of his hope. If we have sown spiritual things for you, is it a great thing if we reap your material things? If others are partakers of this right over you, are we not even more? Nevertheless, we have not used this right, but endure all things, lest we hinder the gospel of Christ. So here Paul made a couple of statements about working in hope, and that gospel workers should be able to work for the gospel and work for the church with hope of this type of compensation, that they would be able to continue their work and continue to prosper on some level, at least have their necessities provided for in order for their work to continue. Now, at the end of this passage is really where it started coming together in my mind. He said, "Nevertheless, we have not used this right, but endure all things, lest we hinder the gospel of Christ." All of these rights that Paul just explained, he wasn't using. He had a secular position. He did not have a wife that he expected the church to provide for. All of these different rights he was talking about were not things that he was demanding of the church. These were arguments to stop those who doubted his integrity and sincerity in the gospel. So he wasn't being greedy. He wasn't being demanding of the church. And so gospel workers today should have the same type of attitude, not demanding more from the church, not expecting the church to help them live an extravagant lifestyle, but just to receive what the church offers, work if they have to or if they choose to, and further the gospel. That was Paul's mission in all of these statements that he made, just to help the gospel go farther, just to help his work there in Corinth. Let's continue on in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Let's read verses 13 through 14, where it talks about religious workers, specifically of the Jews, being provided for. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 13 through 14. He says, "Do you not know that those who minister the holy things eat of the things of the temple, and those who serve at the altar partake of the offerings of the altar? Even so, the Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should live from the gospel." So here Paul again connects the compensation of gospel workers back to concepts from the old law. And he's connecting it to things that God set in place many years before for example, the Levites working for God, working to make these sacrifices to him, and then they would be allowed to eat a part of the meat. And also, if you'll remember from the old law, some of the crops from the other tribes were given to the tribe of Levi to help them. And so this is a concept that's even back from the old law that should still apply to gospel workers, in that when a gospel worker gives his life to the church, he can expect to have some type of compensation for it. And so we see here that even in the old law, these workers for the Lord lived from the gospel, as it says at the end of this passage. They had their necessities provided for from the work that they were doing for God. And so that is something that was prescribed many years ago that still applies for gospel workers. Let's continue to 1 Corinthians 9, verses 15 through 18, where Paul changed his gear slightly to the spiritual reward of the teaching and the gospel work that he was doing. 1 Corinthians 9, 15 through 18. It says, "But I have used none of these things, nor have I written these things, that it should be done so to me. For it would be better for me to die than that anyone should make my boasting void. For if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of. For necessity is laid upon me. Yes, woe is me if I do not preach the gospel. For if I do this willingly, I have a reward. But if against my will, I have been entrusted with a stewardship. What is my reward then? That when I preach the gospel, I may present the gospel of Christ without charge, that I may not abuse my authority in the gospel." Now let's look at a couple of things in this first part of this passage here. Again, he said, "I have used none of these things, and I didn't write them so that you would do them for me. I didn't write them so you'd give me more and help me more." Instead, he had a gospel purpose and a spiritual purpose in mind by writing these things. And then he said, "It would be better for me to die than that anyone should make my boasting void." Now, all of the things that Paul talked about his credentials and things like that, were his boasting. And so, in order to make those void, his detractors were trying to take away his reputation, take away these things that allowed him to teach and have some type of leverage with the people specifically there in Corinth. And so people were trying to take away his credentials, the things that he was able to tell them about and to boast about in a sense for the purpose of furthering the gospel and for the purpose of building his reputation for his work. And so they were trying to make his boasting void, and he said it would be better for him to die because he would no longer have the same ability to preach the gospel and the same leverage with it that he had had once before. Now also, he says in verse 16, "For if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of. For necessity is laid upon me. Yes, woe is me if I do not preach the gospel." So Paul is saying here that actually he has nothing to truly boast about in his work for the gospel, but instead that he feels compelled to do it. In fact, he was chosen. He was a chosen vessel to preach to the Gentiles, and he was chosen by the Lord. And so he was indeed compelled to teach the gospel, and he said here in verse 16 as well, "Woe is me if I do not preach the gospel." So he knew that he needed to do this. He knew that that was required of him. And then in verse 17, he says, "For if I do this willingly, I have a reward." And this ties back perfectly to some of the arguments made by his detractors, that he was not doing it willingly, that he was not sincere in his work. And he says, if he did it willingly, which he did, he would receive a reward. Then he says, "What is my reward then? That when I preach the gospel, I may present the gospel of Christ without charge." Now, what's he mean here when he says, without charge? Now, when someone accuses someone of something, that can also be called them charging them of something. And so that connects to the accusations from some of these false teachers in Corinth, that he could preach the gospel and they would have absolutely no reason to accuse him in the ways that they had before. And so that's what he's meaning with this fulfillment of preaching the gospel without charge, without this accusation from them, and that their accusation would be meaningless and that it would not be true about him. Now let's continue to 1 Corinthians 9, verses 19 through 23, where he gives several examples that compare quite closely to what he was doing for these false teachers in Corinth. 1 Corinthians 9, 19 through 23 says, "For though I am free from all men, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win the more, and to the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might win the Jews, to those who are under the law as under the law, that I might win those who are under the law, to those who are without the law as without the law, not being without law toward God, but under law toward Christ, that I might win those who are without law. So to the weak I became as weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. Now this I do for the gospel's sake, that I may be partaker of it with you." So here Paul talked about a few different scenarios that compare closely to what he was doing for these false teachers in Corinth. He was helping them by putting himself on the same level with them and by relating to them in a certain way. He did things and made sacrifices in his work in order to not offend their consciences in a way, and also in taking away their arguments, he was allowing them to perhaps regain respect for him. And so here we see a few examples of ways that he would do that for others. First of all, he mentioned the Jews here and those who were under the law. Or actually, he mentioned servants first. He mentioned those who were servants and how he became a servant as well. We can think of this in terms of how he was a servant to Christ and how he could relate to them just basically on a human level, relate to them in a way that would allow him to help them and to teach them. But also we see a few different examples as well here in Galatians chapter 3 and verse 28 that connect back to that passage and how he should have been able to relate to them as a Christian. Galatians 3 and verse 28. It says, "There is neither Jew nor Greek. There is neither slave nor free. There is neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus." Now, while he was looking at these people in the church there in Corinth, he could look at them and see them as people he could relate to, because they were all the same in the church there. And so with that knowledge of their similarities in Christ, he should have been able, as he was, to relate to them and teach them and help them. And so we see, first of all, the slaves or servants that he was able to relate to in that way. We see also the Jews, or those under the law, which he related to, for example, in the way that he would not eat of meat sacrificed to idols in order to avoid making them sin or harming their consciences. He also talked about the Greeks, the Gentiles, those without the law, and how he could do certain things that would be illegal under the law in order to help them as well. Things that were not sinful for him, he would obviously not go beyond those boundaries, but do things that were allowed, things that were allowed before the Lord in order to help them. And finally, he talked about those who were weak. Let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 11, which is included in that topic of meat sacrificed to idols and how he helped those who were weak. 1 Corinthians 8 and verse 11. It says, "And because of your knowledge, shall the weak brother perish for whom Christ died?" So here we see that he's talking about these weaker people, these people with a weaker conscience who could be harmed more easily. And so he's talking about ways that he could help them, for example, by not partaking of the meat sacrificed to idols. So that was a way that he could help them and reach them more easily. Now finally, let's look here in 1 Corinthians 9, 24 through 27, where Paul talked about self-discipline and what was necessary in order to succeed in a Christian race. 1 Corinthians 9, 24 through 27, it says, "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. And everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown. Therefore I run thus, not with uncertainty. Thus I fight, not as one who beats the air. But I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified." Paul went to extreme efforts in order to help these people, in order to be able to reach them with the gospel, or just to be able to help them as fellow Christians. And so he went to extreme ends to push himself, perhaps out of his comfort zone at times, to push himself to do what was necessary for them. Everything that he did was focused around the gospel, working for Christ himself and helping others to come to work for Christ themselves. Everything he did was focused on the gospel. Let's conclude with 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 33 this evening. It says, "Just as I also please all men in all things, not my own profit, but the profit of many, that they might be saved." Now, in doing the things that he did to stop his detractors from seeing him as insincere, we might think that he was doing it to please men, as he says here at the beginning of verse 10. However, in pleasing them, in doing these things to make them at ease with what he was doing, he was furthering the gospel and allowing his work there at Corinth to succeed. And so it all ties back so that many may be saved. He wasn't seeking his own benefit in any of these things, but seeking the things for the Lord. Paul had an extreme commitment to Christ in his work. And in all of these things, he wanted the best for others. He wanted to further the gospel in them all. Tonight, if you don't feel like you have the proper commitment to God that you need, if you don't feel like you have the commitment to Christ in order to make the sacrifices like Paul did, we can help you with that. If you're not a Christian this evening and need to be baptized and become a Christian tonight, we want to help you. Or if you're already a Christian but don't feel like you're as committed to Christ, you don't feel like you're self-disciplining enough, we want to help you as well through encouragement and prayers. If there's one of either class, please come, let your needs be made known while we stand and while we sing.